This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Let's face it, Christmas songs can be pretty schlocky. And each year in Britain, a slew of new songs is released in a desperate stab to reach the top of the December charts. Here's actor Bill Nye dishing out the ugly truth in the 2003 movie Love Actually.
But wouldn't it be great if number one this Christmas wasn't some smug teenager, but an old ex-heroin addict searching for a comeback at any price? So if you believe in Father Christmas, children, like your Uncle Billy does, buy my festering turd of a record, and particularly enjoy the incredible crassness of the moment when we try to squeeze an extra syllable into the fourth line.
I think you're referring to If You Really Love Christmas.
Come on and let it snow. Ouch.
And it is not just holiday-themed songs that reach the top in the UK. Take 2000's winning song, Can We Fix It? By Bob the Builder. Sophie Gilbert is senior editor at The Atlantic and a Brit who has suffered through a series of Christmas number ones. She's here to walk us through the rather tacky tradition. And Sophie, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for those who have not seen Love Actually or lived in Britain, what is the Christmas number one?
So the Christmas number one is something that British people have obsessed over, I think, for more than 40 years now. For some reason, every year around this time of year, people get really, really interested and fixated on what song will be number one at the week leading up to Christmas. And I think the first official song that was actually number one at Christmas time was Slade's Merry Christmas, Everybody, in 1973.
So
and then ever since then, we've had a sort of variety of different songs, some good, some bad, some really bad. And it's kind of been up and down since then.
You mentioned in your article about this a memory of a particularly bad Christmas number one from your childhood back in 1993. What was that one?
So in 1993, I was 10 years old, and the winning Christmas number one single was done by not really a children's character, but a sort of novelty character called Mr. Blobby. And he was a 7-foot pink and yellow I guess a blob. He kind of looked like a bowling pin. He was nonverbal. The only word I think he could really say was blobby, which you'd think would be challenging when you're releasing a single, but apparently not in this case. And he released what gets my vote for possibly the worst Christmas single of all time, a song called Mr. Blobby.
Lyrics?
The lyrics are actually recorded, I think, by a children's choir, and then there are some other singers in there who sing about Mr. Blobby and about why he's, you know, actually a really good star and secretly a hidden talent, and everyone just misses it because he's, you know, known to be an idiot, and the only word he can say is Blobby.
Okay, I listen to this and think, number one song?
I think 600,000 people paid money for it in 1993.
Well, this kind of undoes every American idea about Brits having superior taste.
Yes, and I think really the one thing that the Christmas number one does is reveal that that is actually a myth, that we have very strange, very eccentric tastes sometimes, particularly at Christmas time when there seems to be this great affection for kind of novelty performers like Mr. Blobby and then obviously in 2000, Bob the Builder.
So what's the deal? Why are Christmas number one so wretched?
It's a very good question. I mean, it's sort of become this thing now where originally I think it was a prestigious thing for a band to get at the Christmas number one, and over the past 10 to 15 years, actually, it's been taken over by The X Factor, which is a British reality show. I think most of the winners during that period have come from that. But there is also this sort of sense now that the Christmas number one needs to be subverted, either by strange acts or by, I think in 2009, there was a social media campaign to have Rage Against the Machine, you know, take the top spot, mm-hmm. which they did.
Willie in the name of...
And this year, in fact, there is a recent campaign by an artist. Well, not really an artist, but he's a professional builder who has released a single under his name, The Wealdstone Raider. And basically, It's this sort of 50-something man rapping about how he has no fans.
When I say don't know, you say fans. Don't know fans. Don't know fans. When I say don't know, you say fans. Don't know fans. Don't know fans.
So that's a possible contender this year.
Well, I don't want to sound scroogey about this. I mean, is there any joy at all in anticipating these new Christmas songs?
I think it's fun. I think it's become a part of the holiday tradition. And I think, like I said, we're a kind of eccentric nation and people sort of take joy every year in anticipating the new and strange and, you know, tacky and potentially very odd hits that we might get to listen to.
So it could be that it's so bad that it's good.
Exactly, which again is another very British tradition.
Wait, have you ever liked the Christmas number one, Sophie?
There have been a few that have been actually quite good songs. But I think it's funny, some of the more prestigious and longer lasting Christmas songs seem to have got to the number two spot. I think you had songs like in 1994, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, which is obviously a huge Christmas hit, only managed to get to number two. I think in 1984, Wham's Last Christmas only got to number two. So it seems like, oh, and then in 1987, The Pogues' Fairy Tale of New York, which is a wonderful Christmas song, only got to number two.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune, I turn my face away.
So it seems to be, if you want to have a sort of long-lasting impact on Christmas music, that seems to be the spot to get.
Well, you mentioned a late riser for this year, but what else is in the running for Christmas number one 2014?
So for a while, people thought that Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars might be able to take the top spot.
This is that ice cold Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Styling, wilding.
And then unfortunately now, it seems like Ben Haynow, who most recently won the X Factor, is going to be number one on Christmas Day. He seems like he's going to be pretty hard to beat.
So the all-star Do They Know It's Christmas for updated for Ebola, nowhere in the running?
I mean, it's in the running, but it seems unlikely at this point that it will actually take the top spot. But yeah, I think it's the third iteration of that song. And it's funny, again, because that's a song which sort of everyone seems to groan at every time it plays. But it obviously is a song with a good charitable motive. So, if, you know, if you want one to buy this year, that might be the good one.
Sophie, are you claiming Christmas number one refugee status now in the U.S.? I mean, you're trying to get away?
It's funny. After I wrote this story and I posted it on Facebook, it's funny how many people I heard from who live in the U.S. now who are sort of like, oh, I miss this tradition. And it is always a fun one every year to kind of just see the horrors that are going to be inflicted upon the British people. But you know, it's a tradition like any kind of tradition. You sort of miss it during the holidays.
Well, thank goodness for the internet is all we can.
Yeah.
Sophie Gilbert is senior editor at The Atlantic. You can find a link to read her story, How Bad Music Became a British Christmas Tradition, and listen for yourself. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you so much for listening today. And as we contemplate bad British Christmas number ones, maybe you have a few bad holiday songs that you loathe. Some in-house contenders, Paul McCartney's Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time, All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey, although that one does have a few defenders, and Here Comes Santa Claus. Yep, we're a bunch of Scrooges. Care to add, to defend, to tell us to lighten up? You can post your thoughts on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouth. After all, the most annoyingly enjoyable earworms get triggered by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Join us for more Word of Mouth tomorrow at 2 on New Hampshire Public Radio.